plain that it wasn't fair, she responded, well, look what happened to Kenneth. I made a mistake doing that with him. I'm not going to make the same mistake with you. And that was why I never rebelled. I saw where the road of not listening to my mom went. But I never saw examples of what happened to people who stuck to the other road. So I made a decision to suck it up, listen to my mom, and make the best of the situation. Now, as a single mother just getting by, she never let me know how hard it was for her to spend so much time and money looking after me. Even though we didn't live in the best apartments and our neighborhood was pretty rough, my mom made sure that we lived clean and had food on the table. Her attitude was, I'll figure it out by myself. I'll find a way to pay for his swimming, put money away for his education, donate to the church, pay our rent, and keep the electricity on. Throughout my whole childhood, I only saw my mom reach out to one person for help, Ms. Davis. Chapter 10, Confessions of a Ladies' Man. Ms. Davis was old. I mean, really old. She lived by herself. She was one of those sweet, powder-smelling church-going ladies who filled their houses with dogs and cats after their husband and children left or passed away. Not long after my brother went into the military, my mom asked her for the only favor I ever heard her request. She had no other choice. There were gaps of time after school or basketball practice when my mom had to be at work, and she couldn't risk losing her job by leaving early or losing me by leaving me unsupervised. Can you look after Kevin while I'm at work? That's what my mom asked Ms. Davis one day. She said, I don't want him on the street, so can you make sure that he's at your house and doing homework, and I'll just pick him up as soon as I get off work, and I'll give you something for your time. It turned out to be a good deal for Ms. Davis. Let me explain to you how a typical afternoon of babysitting went. See this here stamp? Notice how it doesn't have any black marks on it? I'm trying to find stamps like these. So any mail that you see with a clean stamp on it, take that stamp off and put it to the side, and I can use it when I send stuff out. Okay, so let me get you straight, Ms. Davis. You want me to take stamps that have already been used off the mail and put those stamps to the side so you can stamp those stamps on new stuff. That's exactly what I'm telling you. And when you're done, I want you to go clean off all those steps over there. What steps? The steps down to the basement. I don't go in there. I don't do nothing in there, but them steps are dirty. They're filthy. Okay, well, if you don't go in there, then why do you want me to clean them? You just said that you don't go down there. Boy, don't make me... The last thing I would want to do is tell your mother that you're being disrespectful. I ain't said nothing disrespectful. I'm using logic based off of what you tell me. Go wash the steps or I will speak to your mother. Yes, ma'am. I will wash these steps, ma'am. There was so much shit in that basement that it looked like a city garbage dump. I made more than a fort out of that junk down there. I built a high-end, multiple-room clubhouse using old cushions and blankets as walls. I hid out there as much as possible to avoid doing some useless chores for her. That was where I first saw a naked woman. I found a Playboy magazine in a pile of clutter, so I took it to the reading room in my clubhouse, where I had a little chair set up. I devoured every square inch of that magazine as I was reading. I'd hear Miss Davis calling around the house and outside the front door for me. I'd yell back, I'm all right! And I was all right. Shit, I had a hard dick. Why wouldn't I be all right? That Playboy magazine gave me everything I wanted and more. Now, even though I've seen pictures of my mom's mother holding me when I was a baby, I don't remember meeting my grandparents much. I don't. So Ms. Davis became my play grandmother. I began thinking of her pets as my own, bringing them down to the clubhouse to hang out. I was a lonely mama's boy living in an imaginary world created out of boredom and blankets. However, thanks to Ms. Davis, I learned a skill that would serve me well in life, charm. Charm is an amazing skill to be acquired. See, she constantly threatened to tell my mom if I stepped out of line or if I didn't listen to her. And if she said anything to my mom that remotely implied wrongdoing on my part, oh, I'd get a whipping for sure. Yeah, I'd get a whipping that I'd never forget. One time, I remember Ms. Davis told my mom that I hadn't done my homework. My mom turned red and began reaching for something to smack me with. There was nothing nearby except for her key ring, which had a small canister of mace on it. I'll never forget the feeling of looking at it and thinking, God, please do not let my mother mace me. Please don't let her be angry enough to mace me. Since preventing a beating was a matter of survival, I learned to use charm to manipulate Ms. Davis. It turned out to be one of the first things in life to come easy for me. One day I went on a bike ride outside Ms. Davis's house and I pedaled around the corner and out of her sight. When I came back, she threatened to tell my mom. and I had to escalate to stage 5 on a charming manipulation scale. CMS is what I call that. That's how you shut it down. The stages were as follows. Stage 1, plead. Can you please not tell my mom? Please! Please don't tell her. Why you gotta tell her? Please. I ain't even do nothing around there. Please don't tell her. Stage 2. Elicit pity. She gonna whoop me so hard. Okay, I'm just letting you know right now. If you tell her, you're gonna be responsible for one of the hardest whoopings I've ever gotten. She just doesn't understand what it's like to be a kid. And when she whoops me, it hurts. It hurts, and I don't like to tell her. I don't like to tell her it hurts because I don't want her to feel bad about it, which is why I'm telling you. Please. Please don't do it, because if she do this to me, it's going to hurt. She whoops me so hard. She's heavy-handed. It's like she got rocks in her hands. It's like she was born with bricks underneath her hands. And it's inside. She's got rock hands. Have you ever seen anybody with rock hands? Shake her hand. Shake her hand when she come pick me up, and you're going to feel what I feel. It's rocks. Stage 3, engage empathy. If you had been out there with me, you would have done the same thing. Okay, I had no choice. I had no choice. Everybody was pedaling around that corner. I was the only kid that would have turned around. You know what they would have said? Why don't I like them? Why is Kevin not hanging with us? What is wrong with us? I didn't want to make those kids feel bad, so I went for them. That's why I went. It was for them. Stage 4, appeal to values. I saw Ty on the corner, and I thought that he could help me with my homework. Okay? So let me break this down for you. Okay? First of all, education is first. So because of that, I said, how can I check my homework? Because I didn't want you to check it, because I knew that this is something that you may or may not remember. This is stuff that wasn't in your time. Then they're using new stuff. With shapes and angles that you may or may not have known. Ty was the only person that could help me. That's why I went around that corner. For my homework. I'm trying to better myself and be the best student possible. Ty could help with that. Stage 5. Appeal to self-interest. I'll clean your back room if you don't tell. That back room is filthy. And I'm gonna be honest with you. I ain't seen your cat in a while, and your cat may be dead in that back room. If you don't tell, I will not only go search for the cat. If that cat is dead, I'll bring the cat back to life. I'm willing to give that cat mouth to mouth after cleaning that dirty room, just if you don't tell my mom. Stage 6, run out of angles. If you run out of angles, you just got to get your ass whooped. If none of that stuff works, you just take defeat. Fine. Fuck it. That's what you got to do. Fuck it. Bring on the whooping. Bring it on. You got to just go crazy. Because if you go crazy enough, they may see the crazy in you just, and they may just say, I'm going to let you off this time because you're crazy. That's the only good in being crazy. One time I remember eating peanut butter and putting the peanut butter on my butt, and I act like I shit it on myself. I would have got away with it if I didn't try to wipe it on her face. That's when she knew it was peanut butter. If I had to just went with the look of peanut butter being shit, she would have thought I was batshit crazy. But I took it too far. Ass whooping was deserved for my mother on that day. I want to go on record and say that. I deserved that ass whooping. When Ms. Davis said, boy, if you take that bike around that corner one more time, I will speak with your mama. I knew I succeeded, people. I knew that my charm had gotten me to a place of success. See, you never wanted to get to stage 6. Stage 6 is a stage of failure. I passed. It worked, and I vowed to never go down that route again. I was going to charm the shit out of Ms. Davis for the rest of my life. Chapter 11, The Hot Stuff, and I'm not talking about my balls. The only relief from the monotony of being under my mom's control was spending time with my dad. But between how rarely she let him see me and how rarely he remembered to see me, I mean, that wasn't very often. The great thing about my dad, though, was that he would get me cool shit. At one point, I wanted to be a professional BMX rider. I mean, it was the biggest thing in the neighborhood. All the popular kids were tricking their bikes out. So I asked my mom for one. Sure, you can get a bike, she said. I was shocked to hear that. That shock didn't last long, though. The next day, she came home with a tricycle. I got you this because those new bikes aren't safe. Thanks, Mom. Thank you. A goddamn tricycle. I appreciate this, Mom. What, you think I'm gonna go outside pedaling this thing with my ass dragging on the sidewalk while all my friends are doing willies and jumping shit? This ain't even a bike, Mom. The next time I saw my dad, I told him, I said, Dad, dude, you would never guess what happened, man. I asked Mom for a bike. My mom brought me a tricycle. My dad looked me in the eyes. He said, you want a bike? I said, yeah, man, I do want a bike. He said, I'm gonna tell you something, son. I'm gonna get you a brand new, genuine BMX bike. Later that day, he bought me a 6-speed Huffy. It was called a Sonic 6. Man, let me tell you something. This thing was a sight for sore eyes. It had a shield over the handlebars with gear shifters behind it. If you pulled the brake up real fast, it would even spin out. It was exactly what I wanted. Go ahead, boy. Go ride that bike. I couldn't believe it. This was the greatest gift of my life, man. It was not only the greatest gift, it was the greatest day. I came home with my new bike early in the evening. I was all hyped up. Mom! Come outside, Mom! Oh, my. Mom, look! Look what Dad got me. It's a Sonic 6. It's outside right now. Wait till you see it. Mm-hmm. You ain't playing with that. It's stolen. Where's he at? What do you mean stolen? I think he's talking to somebody around the corner. Well, you tell him to come back over here. Yeah, but you go tell him to come back around here. Or do you want me to go tell him? My mom wouldn't even wait for my answer. She marched downstairs with me under one arm and a bike dragging from the other. My dad saw the approaching storm and instantly went on the defensive. Nance, don't start that stuff. Yeah, well, I am going to start that stuff. My boy ain't playing with that stuff. That mess is hot. That was the expression that she always used. It's hot. Now, for those who do not know, hot is slang term for stolen. So no Sonic 6 for me. Now in my mom's defense, when I cooled off the next day, I realized that the bike hadn't come with a price tag, instructions, stickers, or anything that an item sold in the store would normally have. Not long after that, my dad came by with a trash bag full of my favorite action figures. They weren't even in packages, of course. They were just lying mangled in that bag. I was starting to notice that nothing he got me ever came in a box or with a price tag or wrapped in plastic. But it didn't matter. Mom! Mom, look! Come here, Mom, look! Dad got me the Lex Luthor and the Michael Jackson. Oh, my God. These are He-Men. He got me the He-Men, Mom. That stuff is hot. You ain't gonna play with that hot mess. But Mom, put that stuff back in that bag, tie it up, and give it to me right now. I returned everything to the bag, tied it up, gave it to her obediently. She put it outside the door and called my dad. You come get this hot shit right now. That stuff is so hot it's got my goddamn front steps smoking. That shit is smoking at the top of the stairs. I don't want it in this apartment. My dad always got me the perfect gifts. Even if they were all stolen. But my mom, who spent actual money, always managed to screw it up. No matter what I wanted to get to fit in with the other kids in school, she always managed to buy something that would make me an outcast instead. At that time, just like nearly every other kid, I looked up to Michael Jordan. I mean, why wouldn't you? Michael Jordan was amazing. I remember when he wore compression shorts underneath his basketball shorts. I mean, when he started doing that, some of the kids on my team, they began dressing the same way. So I made the mistake of saying to my mom for Christmas, I was like, Mom, I want to get some of those basketball tights that can go under your shorts like Michael Jordan wears. That's it? That's what you want for Christmas? Yes, that's it, Mom. That's all I want for Christmas. When Christmas rolled around, there was a small package from my mom waiting for me under the small tree. I tore open the gift wrap, threw the lid off the box, and saw girls' tights. I can't make this up, people. They were spandex. Really tight spandex. They were not even remotely close to what Michael Jordan wore. I want you to understand what I mean when I say spandex. Picture Jane Fonda back in the day doing an exercise video. Remember those spandex that she wore? That's what my mom bought me to wear underneath my basketball shorts. When I saw my ass, I was like, Mom, what are these? What am I supposed to do with these? I'm supposed to go to ballet class? What are these even supposed to be? You said tights, didn't you? So I went and got you tights. I couldn't find your size nowhere. So I got these. Boy, wear those tights. Trust me. Those tights are going to be fine. I trusted my mom, and I wore them under my shorts to the next game. All I remember hearing is when I got to my basketball game. Yo, what kind of tights is those, Kev? That's one of my teammates yelled out. I don't think they're for basketball, bruh. Those can't be for basketball. I gave him the best answer that I could. Uh-huh. Yes, they are. You just don't know what you're talking about. These are for basketball. He said, let me see. He reached for the label. I tried to dodge him. I mean, I dodged every one that I could that day. but I couldn't dodge good enough. I took the little thrashing from my basketball team, and I took the teasing. See, people say that when it comes to gift-giving, it's the thought that counts. Well, don't believe them. It's the gift that counts. Now, I'm being honest with y'all, my mom fucked that gift up. It was a simple ask. You could have went to any sporting goods store, and you could have got the tights that I wanted. Do you understand where you had to go to get the female tights? You completely left the young men's athletic department and went to where you know boys shouldn't be. So I blame you for that, Mom. I love you. But you fucked that gift up, Mom. I held that in for a long time. But the good news is I got it out. Chapter 12. Horse Face and Jammin' Joe. Every kid reaches a breaking point where he or she says, all right, now I know you're the parent and you're an adult, but I'm going to speak my mind. My moment was in the seventh grade. My friend's dad was taking him and some other kids to Clemenger Park on a Saturday afternoon. The amusement park wasn't that far away, but my mom, well, I mean, she didn't know the other kid or his parents, so she refused to let me go. That's when I decided, you know what, I'm going to go for it. Whatever happens, happens, but enough is enough. I'm sick of this shit. Sick of it. I could feel the lump forming in my throat as I got ready to stand up to her for the first time and make my voice heard. I don't know what these people are about. That's what my mom said. I have no idea what they're about. I'm not letting you go off with a bunch of strangers to get left behind accidentally or to get caught up in some gang activity. What are you talking about, Mom? He's my friend. He's a good person. And so is his dad. Look, they would never do that. I said no, Kevin. And that's what I mean. End of discussion. I'm sick of this. Okay, I don't want to be here no more. That's right, I don't want to live here no more. See, that's the thing about standing up to your parents for the first time. You get more confident as you go. I started off with a stutter, but then I eventually started off and developed into what was an amazing role. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of this, and I don't want to be here anymore. That's right. I don't want to live here. I got cool. I got confident. You know where I want to live? Not here. I want to live with Dad. You know why I want to live with Dad? Because Dad lets me do whatever I want. Then go. You want to live with your dad? Go live with your dad. Huh? What'd you say? Then go live with your dad, Kevin. Go ahead. What? What? You heard what I said? If that's what you want, you're free to go. Go. All right, well, okay. Cool. I couldn't believe my luck. You got to be kidding me. I was finally free. You telling me I'll be able to go to the movies and birthday parties and play outside with friends like a normal kid? Plus, maybe my dad can find me another Sonic 6? Oh, man. I got it made. Man, let me tell you something. I stuffed my clothing into a shopping bag and grabbed my basketball so fast. All right, I'm ready to go. My mom then took me to my dad's house in South Philadelphia, and she left me there. When I looked up at the building, half the windows were either broken or didn't have shades. The place looked abandoned. I walked up the stairs only to find that my dad's apartment made ours look like a mansion in comparison. It was a single room with ratty furniture and a bare light bulb hanging from the ceiling. The small space was packed with people and animals and smoke and empty beer bottles and trash all over the floor. Kev! That's what my dad yelled as soon as I entered, like I just arrived at the party. Hey, you remember your Aunt Antoinette and your cousin Alton, Pat, they go Grant over there, Jammin' Joe, Horseface. You see Horseface in the corner. And, of course, your Uncle Don and your Uncle Ray Ray. That's my buddies Tank and JoJo over there in the corner. Not a single one of these people looked familiar. I took a step forward and stepped in shit from some kind of animal. I didn't know what kind because there were creatures all over the place. Dogs, cats, birds, snakes. Rats. Where my mom was all about structure, understanding my dad had no sense of order at all. With his apartment's yellowing walls, its stench of body odor, stale cigarette smoke, and animal droppings, it felt like I'd entered the armpit of the world. There was no actual dinner time. There was just food lying around, which you had to grab before someone else did. When I got tired, I went to take a bath, but the apartment didn't have hot water. I had to heat the water on a kerosene heater, then dump it into the tub. I went to sleep in that room, which was still filled with animals, dubious relatives, and friends of my dad's. There was barking, snoring, and elbows and knees poking me. I could barely sleep. At 7 in the morning, I untangled myself, crept out of the room, and found the phone and called my mom. "Can I come back home?" She didn't seem surprised to hear from me. An hour later, she picked me up at my dad's house and walked me home. As she did, she spoke sternly to me. "Now, you're either going to respect my rules and respect my word, or you're not going to live under my roof. It's that simple, Kevin." I thought about her ultimatum. There was no middle ground between my parents. I could either choose a comfortable dictatorship, or I could choose an uncomfortable anarchy. I could follow in my brother's footsteps or stay on another path. There was only one decision that I could make. "Yes, Mom." In retrospect, I realized that she had known all along exactly what was going to happen and how things would play out. It was like a poker game, and she played her hand perfectly. She could have written a book on reverse psychology. Once, after a friend of mine was caught smoking, she asked if I smoked too. I told her truthfully that I never smoked and had no interest because Dad smoked cigarettes and I hated the smell. She said, "If I ever see a single sign that maybe you've smoked a cigarette, you're going to sit in front of me and I'm going to make you smoke 5 packs of cigarettes right there. You'll be so disgusted by smoking that you'll never want to pick up a cigarette again." After I left my dad's house that morning, carrying my basketball and clothes in defeat, I wasn't the same. I learned a valuable lesson that would last me a lifetime. It's easy to complain about your life, how tough it is, how unfair it is, how stressful it is, how everyone else has it much better. But if you step into the life of someone you envy for just a day, you'll discover that everyone has their own problems, and they're usually worse than yours, because your problems are designed specifically for you, with the specific purpose of helping you grow. Experiencing a lifestyle without structure, discipline, value, strictness, and work ethic taught me to appreciate them a little more. Instead of just seeing the things that my mom was taking away from me, I began to see things that she was giving me. I didn't flip all the way from resentment to appreciation, but I began that slow process. And logically, no other response to the ups and downs of life makes sense besides gratitude. You are already in your experience. So you can either resent and resist it and make it that much less enjoyable, or you can accept it and find something positive in it. I accepted that I was stuck with my mom, so I may as well make the best of it. At times, that meant I was trying to sneak around behind her back to get what I wanted. But that didn't last long either. Unfortunately, I didn't have the ability to outsmart my mother. I learned this the hard way. Life lessons from school. No matter what you may think, education is important and you need it, and you can't succeed without it. Unless you're talented and intelligent and figure out another path. Chapter 13, Secrets of an International Playboy. I had a tough time with girls. The reason is because my mom used to cut my hair. Just like she refused to drive, she wouldn't take me to get a haircut. "I'm not paying nobody to do what I can do." That's what she would always say. My mom would put a bowl over my head, grab the clippers, and go around my head one time against the grain, and that was my haircut. Once, I looked in the mirror afterwards, and there were these random bald patches. I'm telling you what I look like. I look like a Lego figure after you unsnap the hair from it. Meanwhile, she used to go to the hair salon and get a shape up. Yeah, she would treat herself great. Shape ups and trims. To this day, I don't understand this shit. My brother actually began his entire life of crime because he wanted a haircut and couldn't figure out any way to get money besides stealing. On my right-hand path, I realized that I could set up a barter system with my mom. The secret was to find something that was more important to her than $12 for a haircut. And that something was my grades. One day in the middle of school, when I got good grades in my report card, which for me were B's, my mom gushed. "I'm so proud of you, boy. What do you want as a reward? Name anything." "All I want is a haircut from a barbershop." "I can just cut it for you, Kevin." No. That's not what I want. "I'm begging you, Mom. Let me go to the barbershop. I just want to experience a professional barber one time." "Okay, Kevin, fine. But don't get used to this." The next day I went to school, saw the popular girl that I liked, and with the confidence that only a hairstyle not cut by your mama can bring, I said, "Hey." To my complete surprise, she replied, "Ha!" That was the first time she ever spoke to me. "I got a haircut." I told her like a goddamn idiot. She smiled. And that was enough for me. See, I decided that looking good made the world revolve around you. To this day, I still remember the name of the guy who cut my hair. It was Greg. Thank you, Greg. 2 weeks later, the haircut had grown out, and I was right back to where I started. When I asked my mom for money to get my haircut, she refused. I'm not giving you $12 for something that I can do myself right now. Come over here, boy. It'll only take me 5 minutes. That's what I'm afraid of. I muttered that. Of course, I didn't say that out loud. Consequently, I never had girls beating down my locker. You know, I damn sure remember who did have them, though. Hakeem. Fucking Hakeem. The girls loved Hakeem. I was pissed off about that until I realized the secret to his success. It was pubic hair. Yeah. Hey, you got hair on your dick yet, man? Hakeem asked me one day. Random. Fucking random. We in math. That didn't have shit to do with the question the teacher asked me. I don't know why he brought it over here. Now, most guys my age, they seem to be sprouting pubic hair at a rapid rate, and their confidence was growing in tandem. I mean, you were no longer a boy once you got that new growth. You were a fucking man. So, of course, I told him, yeah, man, I'm good down there. He said, let me see, which was fucking random. Okay? Now that I'm older, I'm thinking about that this was freakish. It didn't hit me at the time. I was caught off guard. I thought this is what all the kids were doing. He lowered his waistband to prove that he had his, and I ain't gonna lie, he had it. What the fuck? In my mind, now that I'm even writing this shit, the fuck you show me your dick here for, man? Huh? Hakeem? Don't you do no shit like that? I pray to God my son don't go through this shit. Now, if I didn't back up my words by flashing some fuzz, Hakeem would tell everybody. My already dismal chances with the girls would hit a new low. I had to think quickly. I dropped my notebook on the ground. As Hakeem bent down to pick it up, I reached my hand to the back of my head, pulled out a few strands. Then as Hakeem was standing up, I reached into my waistband, pretending to pull out those pieces of loose hair. Oh, shit. Kev got hair, yo. That's what he said out loud. He got hair. And my middle school life was saved. I ended up doing that maneuver so often that in the following years, I'm surprised I had any hair left on my head. How y'all getting it? That's what I kept asking friends, trying to be casual about it. Like, what y'all doing? Y'all putting grease on it or something? How y'all shit be growing like that? Like, just tell me what y'all doing so I know that what I'm doing is right. I tried everything to spark some growth. Put hair oil on the area. I put shaving cream on it. Fertilizer. I actually put fertilizer where my dick hair was supposed to be. I got fertilizer. Now, here's the bad thing about it. We didn't have grass where I live, so I didn't get it from home. Yeah, I made a bad drug deal at school. I basically asked the guy to get me some fertilizer. He said, for what? I wanted to say for dick hair, but that would have made me look weird, so I just said, for none of your goddamn business. Me and my family going through something. Just give me some in a plastic bag. And he did it. Now, immediately, I went in the bathroom and wet it and smeared it on my area. You know, you don't know that fertilizer stinks until it's in your pants. I found out the hard way. I was stinking like shit in school that day. Lied, told people I shitted on myself. This story can go down a crazy road. Okay? This is what happens in middle school. Everybody goes through this stuff. It's the truth. But I tell you what, nothing worked. The fertilizer didn't work. None of that other shit worked. I didn't get pubic hair until I was almost 18 years old. True story. Being the last person to grow pubic hair in my class was probably the biggest stress I dealt with in my childhood. It was worse than my mom controlling my every movement. Worse than my brother getting arrested and joining the military. Worse than anything that my dad did. And the fucked up thing is, I waited. I waited what seemed like my whole life to get pubic hair. Then as soon as I got it, women started saying, yo, you gotta shave that shit off. Bitch, you know how long it took me to grow this pubic hair? This is 18 years. The fertilizer just kicked in. It took the fertilizers 18 years. And now you want me to cut it off? I guess to be a man, you just gotta be able to prove you can grow it. I guess. And once you know you can, then you're supposed to get rid of it. Is there a life lesson in this? Probably not. But at times, life is random, if not downright stupid. Chapter 14. Packing that meat. Eventually, I realized it wasn't pubic hair that got you to girls. I've been so naive. Girls didn't care about that. They care about things that were more important. Things that really mattered. Things that made a difference. They cared about big dicks. It's truth in this. After hearing two girls talking about the size of Hakeem's dick, I leapt into action. The next day, I came to school in my brother's old sneakers. They were two sizes too big for me. But I knew that as soon as those girls saw how big my feet were, that they'd think about the monster I was packing higher up. Yo, Kev, what's going on? That's what my friend Jabbar asked me. Your feet big as shit, man. Shh. That's what I told him. I said, yo, I'm dealing with it, you know? I mean, what you want me to do? I flopped all over school like I was a man that day. Well, except during basketball practice. I couldn't run in those damn flippers. So my sneakers on the court looked nothing like the ones I wore during school. I was hoping that no one would notice the difference. But I think they did, because pretty soon, everyone started calling me Flip. Fortunately, I have an optimistic disposition. So when fake pubic hair and big shoes didn't get me anywhere with the ladies, I decided to do the one thing that no teenage girl could resist. I decided to join a boy band. New Kids on the Block, Boys to Men, New Edition, all these boy bands were popping. So I told my friend Jabbar, I said, hey man, that's what we should do, okay? If we do this, then we'll be popping too. I'm telling you, look, we'll make it, all right? I elaborated this with such passion. I said, we both talented, and we got great voices. The first problem was my premise. We weren't talented. Let's just nip that part in the bud. And we had horrible voices. But what we did have, we had a great dream. Now, who's going to say no to a child's dream? Hmm? Who? Tell me who. The second problem was that between school and all the extracurricular programs my mother had enrolled me in, I had no free time to rehearse. I solved that one by practicing with Jabbar in Miss Davis's yard. That's right. We were there nearly every afternoon for nearly a month, very seriously working on the lyrics and choreography of our first hit single. It was a song that we were sure would take the teenage girls of the nation by storm. We stood side by side, and then shuffled a step to the right, and I sang, Gonna Love You Up. Then we moved back to the center, and he sang, Gonna Love You Down. And finally, we shuffled a step to the left, and then we both sang, Gonna Love You Always. Oh, man. Brings back memories, doesn't it? Sure does. I'm fucking horrible. But Jabbar didn't tell me, and I didn't tell him. That's a good thing about singing with somebody that can't sing. Both of y'all tone deaf. So it's going to be great to y'all. And it was great to us. I remember I clapped him on the back when we completed that song, and I was like, man, we're going to do this, Jabbar. Kevin Jabbar. Album dropping everywhere this summer. Man, I'm going to get me a house with all this money. That's what Jabbar told me. I'm going to be honest with you. We probably spent more time bigging each other up than singing. Our album was going to be called Didn't Make It. It was a prophetic title. It seemed like whatever I did to be cool only brought me more ridicule. The problem is that in most cases, what it takes to be cool in middle school is money. And we didn't have much of it. I mean, we couldn't afford the Malcolm X jackets that the kids were wearing after the movie came out. We couldn't afford the Air Jordans. We couldn't afford the nice starter jackets. All these phases came and went, and I just watched them pass me by. The only thing I had was my personality, and back then, it wasn't enough. I worked my way down from the most popular girls, who were dating the star quarterbacks or the star point guard or the track and field stars, basically anyone with the word star attached, to the lonely girls who hung out in the library. When I worked up the courage to ask one of the cute but overlooked library girls to a movie, she responded, no, that's not really my thing. I'm in the books. Of course. Yeah, right. Of course. I get it. I said, and then I just slunk away. So that was it for me. I mean, I burned through pretty much the entire female population of school. But fortunately, I lived in the city. So there were other options in the neighborhood. My first big crush was a girl named Tamika. Man, Tamika. She lived in another neighborhood, but would come to visit someone on my block. So I started talking to her. And one day, my dad stopped by and saw me talking to her. I was so proud. I said, Dad, come over here, man. I want you to meet Tamika. My dad said with no hesitation, hey, I don't know about this one, son. Yeah, it's something about her teeth. What, Dad? She right here, man. All right. Okay. Hey, did you at least get your dick wet yet? Dad, I don't know what you're talking about. Just stop. Nah, you ain't never had your dick wet. Hey, all right, that is enough. Dad, we're going to go. Hey, you ain't going to be no... I can't say the word that my dad said due to the fact that I am politically correct, but it's written in my book where I can say there is no mean intent behind it. Then my dad said, show her that long dick. Now, despite my dad's lack of a filter, I eventually got her phone number and managed to convince her to go on a date with me. Now, the next problem was my mom. See, because there was no room in her schedule for this date. The only way I could make it work was to play hooky during school. It took me 2 weeks to convince Tamika to ditch her class, too. Once I did, we were wandering around my neighborhood talking until somebody spotted us. As soon as we were spotted, they called my mom and asked, "Hey, is your son supposed to be in school today? Because I think I see him walking down the street right here." She popped up on me and whooped my ass on the spot, flinging me all over the place in front of Tamika. The saddest thing is, it wouldn't be the most embarrassing beating that I got from my mom. That would happen the following year. That happened when I started high school. Chapter 15, Time Traveling. For the first 13 years of my life, I was one of the taller kids in my class. Then in eighth grade, I stopped growing. My peers surpassed me on the height axis until I was the shortest in class. But in my mind, I was still a giant among teenagers. I even thought that just maybe the NBA was in my future. When freshman year of high school began, a notice went up at George Washington High School. There were going to be trials for the varsity basketball team on Wednesday at 6 in the morning. There was nothing I wanted more than to play varsity basketball and get my career started. Though my mom had signed me up for practically every team in the 30-mile radius, she didn't actually care about sports. She just cared about keeping me off the streets and on her schedule. See, in those days, that schedule included taking a school bus, which didn't pick me up early enough in the morning to get the tryouts. Kevin, you're not leaving this house early in the morning to make those tryouts. The reason why I'm saying that is because you would have to catch public transportation, and it's not safe that early. You're not doing it. That's what my mom told me, flat out. Now, I don't think I've ever been as mad as her as I was that day. I love basketball way too much to miss my one shot at making a varsity team. So I devised a plan. I studied the bus schedule, and I determined that the bus to take was the 4:07 a.m. bus. So the night before tryouts, I crept around the house while my mom was sleeping and meticulously set every clock forward by 2 hours. If there was something that had a time on it, from the VCR to her watch, I set it forward. At 4 in the morning, her alarm clock clicked over to 6 a.m. and it started buzzing. I was already awake and ready to sprint to the bus stop. "Okay, Mom, I'm going to school. I love you." I stepped into my sneakers and stuffed my homework into my book bag. Then I got to the bus stop, made it to the tryouts, and gave it my all. My third period, I was feeling pretty proud of myself for pulling this off. I was joking with a friend in history class, waiting for the teacher to enter the room, when I noticed a familiar head on the other side of the glass panel in the classroom door. It was her. There is no fear like the terror I had of my mom in that moment. As I sat there with my heart clenched and my mouth suddenly dry, the door opened. The principal entered with my mom right behind him. "Kevin," he said, "your mom is here to pick you up." My classmates were instantly jealous. They thought I was getting to leave school early. As I weaved between desks, they all said goodbye and patted me on the back like I was the man. Meanwhile, I was trying not to shit my pants. Every step I took toward the door, I saw my mom's control over her rage slip. By the time I was 2 paces from the door, she had her belt off. My whole body trembled as I took the next step. Suddenly, flat, 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 she started beating my ass in front of the whole class. The kids who had been jealous just the moment before started laughing and making fun of me. I cried up a storm and she whooped me out of the door and into the hallway. She was such a high level of pissed off, even the principal was trying to get her to stop. Oh, even he didn't succeed. My mom beat me all the way out the building and to the bus stop. Then she calmed down, but only for a moment. It was long enough for her to take a break, but during that break, it gave her an opportunity to think about what I'd done. All she needed was a minute. She got angry again, started beating the shit out of my ass one more time. All I could hear was the belt whistling through the air. Had me at work 2 damn hours early. Whack, whack, whack. Wasn't a goddamn soul in sight. Whack, whack, whack. Up to that point, the worst beating I'd gotten was a few years earlier. It was after my first and last time shoplifting. I'd taken a pack of Starbursts from the store because all the kids were eating them, and I just wanted to know what it tasted like. She caught me trying to open one of them on the train, smacked the hell out of me. Then she made me go back to the store, return the Starbursts, and apologize, and she whacked me the whole goddamn time. The fucked up thing about it is, I never got to taste the Starbursts. When the bus finally arrived, she had to pause for a second to pay the fare. Then she found a reason to get mad at me again. "Sit down!" Before my butt even landed on the seat, she hit me again and yelled, "I said sit!" Any excuse there was to hit me, she found it that day. "Don't you look at me like that. Fwap, fwap!" Start crying. Cry again. Stop crying. Fwap! Do it again. I said stop. Fwap, fwap! Stop crying. Fwap, fwap! She didn't realize that the tears continued to come down because she kept hitting me. I mean, it was really common sense if you ask me. If you hit a kid's gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry if you don't hit me. So why don't you stop hitting me so I can do what you asked me to do? I can't do what you asked me to do when you keep doing what you're doing. It was a major agree to disagree situation. Tomato, tomato. One of those type of things. You say tomato, I say tomato. You say stop crying, I say stop fucking hitting me. I mean, it was like that. Now my dad, here's the thing. Despite all the violence I witnessed around him, he only hit me one time. One time. And even then, all he did was put his hand on the top of my head and smack his hand. With my mom, on this particular day, it got to the point where she was slapping the shit out of me over things that were out of my control. I mean, when we got close to our stop, we got up and walked to the door. The bus braked and I stood on the steps, waiting for the doors to open. All of a sudden, behind me, she boomed, "Get off the bus! Flat, flat, flat!" The doors weren't even open yet. I don't know why that's the sound that my mom makes when she hits me, but it sounds cool. Flat, flat, flat! It makes her sound like a ninja. Flat, flat, flat! That's what I'm going to call my mom from this point on when it comes to her hitting me. Ninja mom. Flat, flat, flat! I was grounded for 3 months after that. Now, since I've pretty much been grounded my whole life anyway, I couldn't really complain. Especially since I made the team. Chapter 16, Becoming Elite. Never quit. That was the message that our varsity basketball coach, Calvin Jones, constantly drilled into our heads. He never got angry and yelled at us like other coaches did. Instead, he related to us and cared for us, and he became a mentor to me and many of my other guys. My goal on the team was to be a part of the starting lineup, but there were several players who were much better than me. Coach Jones would constantly tell me not to be comfortable sitting on the bench, but he also refused to let me start out of pity. Instead, he tried to instill in me the will to do better, the will to win, and the will to work hard for all of it. It worked, at least as far as basketball was concerned. When my mom brought me to work with her on the weekend, I'd go to the UPenn gym and play until she came to get me at 5 o'clock. All that basketball and swimming, playing in different leagues and gyms, meeting kids of all races and backgrounds, and traveling to so many different places in the state to compete, probably taught me how to communicate, understand, and get along with all different kinds of people. However, the more I got into basketball, the less excited I got about the swim team. Not only had my mom been making me do it for the last 5 years, but in her tireless effort to keep me busy, when they offered a lifeguarding course, she signed me up for that too. I hated swimming, and I decided to stop trying. It was a serious team, which was later the subject of a film called Pride, along with our coach, Jim Ellis. According to him, we were the first black swim team in our league to compete nationally. My teammates were very competitive and were not only winning medals, but they were all getting A's and B's in school. Meanwhile, I was barely passing classes. My academic philosophy was that less is best. My job was just to show up and not to fail. So I started applying the same philosophy to swimming. I was just there to move my arms and legs in the water and get by. At meets, I'd be the last one flailing in the pool. I'd get out, no one would care. They'd just be waiting for me to finish so they could start the next race. Of course, my mom responded to this minor act of rebellion perfectly. "You want to go and not try? Well, that's on you." That's what she told me after one of my shitty meets. But I'll tell you what, you're still going to go. So you can swim and be good, or you can swim and not be good. But either way, you're still going to be swimming. I stuck with my plan. Around the pool, they had team pictures from different competitions. There were kids diving off starting blocks, holding up gold medals, and celebrating with victories. I understand I've been on the team longer than most of these other kids, and there was just one photo of me. One picture. Out of all the years that I was on, they chose to put the picture up of me digging in my butt. See, we wore Speedos. These Speedos were tight. I didn't like how they fit around my area, so somebody snapped the picture of me digging in my ass, and that's the one memory that we have of Kevin Hart at the swimming pool. It's hard, but it's fair. I'm not gonna lie, I looked awkward, and I looked awkward and suspicious, like I was cheating. That's what it looked like. It looked like I was cheating by slipping some kind of chemical in my butt. Everyone used to joke about that picture. They go digging in his ass, Kev. That's what we used to say. Everybody, let's rub Kev's ass for good luck this meet. Hey, Kev, why don't you go pick in your butt so we can see what we're doing today? It was just nonstop. But it didn't bother me. You know why it didn't bother me? Because I started to realize that I wasn't hurting my mom by not trying. I was only hurting myself. Everything she said always put me in a position to recognize that. The feeling of being left out. of watching everyone else celebrate and talking about winning. It began to outweigh whatever little satisfaction I took in sucking. So I decided to start trying to become a better swimmer and earn some of those gold medals. Unfortunately, that backfired too. By the end of the season, I started winning races and my coaches saw potential in me. They moved me up to the highest level they had, the elites. And now instead of practicing once a day, I was practicing twice a day because the elites, these motherfuckers were going after college scholarships and training for the Junior Olympics. It was too much swimming. By trying to get out of it, I ended up having to do twice as much of it. Maybe that's another reason I so really rebelled against my mom. After every battle for freedom, I somehow ended up with less of it. Chapter 17, Getting Hard. My mom's plan of keeping me busy eventually backfired in a way that she never expected. All those extracurricular athletics made me stronger. Eventually, her beatings didn't hurt anymore. I stopped crying like I used to. The whoopings became more about her to help her feel as if she was doing her job as a parent and disciplinarian. Meanwhile, I was just starting to have an angry outburst and explosions of temper. I wasn't a little boy anymore. And the degree of restriction she imposed wasn't healthy for a teenager. I had friends on the swim team who were leading responsible lives without parental discipline. And it was time for my mom to let go a little as well. For the most part, I lived by our rules and I hadn't joined a gang or snatched purses. So I began to advocate for my freedom, telling my mom whenever I could that she needed to start relaxing, that I could stay out of trouble without her help, that I could take care of myself. She didn't take too kindly to my parenting advice. So when she whooped me or yelled at me, I'd wait a few days until it blew over, then I'd readdress why going in a different direction might be more beneficial for both of us. Usually, this only set her off again. One day she was whooping my ass for having the nerve to tell her how to be a parent. When she got tired of hitting me, and paused to catch her breath, I said, "You had enough?" I couldn't believe the words that had just come out of my mouth. That signified that something was new. Something had changed. The power dynamic was shifting. I knew it. She knew it. And it pissed her off. "Oh, you want to be a smart ass?" She gasped the words between huffs and puffs as she mustered the strength to hit me even harder. She didn't want to show weakness. But a few days later, I complained again about her strict schedule, and she raised her fist and punched me in the arm. Her knuckles cracked against my tricep. When I walked away, I saw her shaking her hand in pain. That's when the beating stopped. She continued to give me verbal beatings, but she knew that short of stabbing, shooting, or macing me, there was nothing she could physically do anymore to harm me. "I mean, as long as you're under my roof, you're under my rules," she reminded me the next time she got upset at me. "Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to get from under this roof as soon as I can." That's what I shot back at her. She then made a promise that I held on to like a gold bar for the rest of high school. "When you're 18 and you graduate high school, you can do whatever you want." "Great, I will. But if you're still living under my roof at that time, you're going to be going to college. You're not going to just do nothing in this house." After that, she started to loosen her controls little by little. And I knew that each new freedom was a test. And I passed it by showing respect for her and the rules and gratitude for her leniency. Even though some of these freedoms seemed huge to me at the time, they were more like quarter turns of a screw. Instead of picking me up in Mrs. Davis's house, for example, she called me when she was leaving work and let me go home on my own and meet her. When she let me go to a friend's birthday party one Saturday night, man, I felt like a prisoner being allowed into the sunshine for the first time in 15 years. And I made damn sure to get back home on time. I knew if I were late that it might not happen again. Chapter 18, My Powers of Observation Amaze Even Me. Then one day we got robbed. The weekend before, my mom and I had been out doing something very rare, shopping for school clothes. She took me to the Burlington Coat Factory and Marshall's to get discounted jeans, shirts, and sweaters. She even got me my first semi-cool pair of shoes, Eastlands. I remember those shoes like it was yesterday, brown leather boots with nice stitching that everyone was wearing in school. It was one of the greatest days of my teenage life. That Monday, I left Miss Davis's house as usual and walked home. As I was climbing our 31st step, I looked at our door and it looked back at me. Something seemed off. It was the hinges. They'd been removed. I screamed, "Oh shit!" I looked around. No one was in sight. I pulled open the door. Actually, that's a lie. I sort of pulled and lifted it because it was more of like an obstacle now than a door. So after I did that, I stuck my head and I yelled. I was like, "Mom!" Now, to be honest, I knew my mom wasn't there. but I figured that was scared of thieves and the murders that I was sure had infested my house. After all, nothing scares a grown-ass man more than someone yelling, "Mom!" like in a whiny voice. That's scary. Especially if you like a pedophile or something. Somebody just start, "Mom!" That's the scare. That may be the worst nightmare for a pedophile. When a pedophile come with the candy, "Hey, you like candy, right? Mom!" Pedophiles out. They can't stay there around that. I've seen it on several documentaries. Several. Okay, back to what I was talking about. I walked inside the house, right? I'm still yelling, "Mom." I'm using that as a weapon. Right now, that's my weapon. I don't need no gun. I got my mom. That's how I'm thinking. That's what's in my head. It dawned on me. Light bulb goes off. That the apartment had only had one door. So where were these criminals going to run if they heard me and panicked? Straight at me. I stopped yelling. The plan wasn't really well thought out, I'll be honest. But you don't plan for these things. They just happen. So I'm walking inside now, slowly. I'm walking very slowly. Scanning for anything suspicious or out of place. I'm scanning, searching, examining. Now the hallway looked like it always looked. No one had taken the ceiling or made the walls wider. Like, I don't know what the fuck I was expecting to see in the hallway. I kept walking, scanning, examining. And then I backtracked and saw it. The stove. There was a pot of half-eaten grits on the stove. I knew it wasn't my mom's because no one leaves a dirty dish in her kitchen. Nobody. It was now pretty clear what had happened. Somebody broke into the house and cooked grits. I had a cook and run situation on my hands. But suddenly, a new and bigger fear raced through my mind. This sneaky cooking motherfucker could have taken my new Eastlands. I just got those Eastlands. That would be the equivalent today of someone breaking into my house and stealing $500,000 worth of jewelry. Which actually happened. Honestly, can't make that shit up. It would be worse, okay? At least the jewelry was insured. My Eastlands weren't. And I was convinced that my previous lack of Eastlands was all that separated me from every girl that I liked at school. I ran back to the room, my heart pounding right now. It's beating on my chest. There they were. Whew. Thank God, my precious Eastlands. I picked them up just in case somebody was hiding and waiting until I left to snatch them. Then I entered my mom's room. Her middle drawer was open. And her stockings, her underwear, her bras, everything was on the floor. And they were clearly tampered with. Now I had more than the cook and run situation on my hands. I had a situation on my hands that I didn't even want to think about. That's not shit I ever want to think about. I suddenly remembered that she hid her money in that drawer. So someone had taken our door off the hinges, entered my mom's bedroom, opened the exact drawer she kept her money, snatched it, and then cooked grits in the kitchen. At least whoever committed this heinous act knew nothing about shoes. Shit! What if they got my new shirts? I ran back to go check. My school clothes were all still there. So I stuffed them into my book bag, just in case the thieves came back for them. Because, of course, that must have been their main objective, before they got too hungry to see it through. I ran back to Miss Davis's house, and I asked if I could use the phone. Once I got my mom on the line, I broke the news. "Mom, I think we've been robbed." To this day, I still don't know why I use those words, "I think." I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know why I ran back to my babysitter's house either, rather than just using the phone at home. I also don't know why I asked my mom to pick me up instead of me just meeting her in front of the house. Yeah, I don't know why I did a lot of things. See, this is all new to me, okay? It was my first time being robbed. No one gets robbed perfectly the first time. It takes experience to get good at it. To not touch stuff and dust for fingerprints and bring in the tracker dogs and do the DNA tests on the grits and all the shit the championship level victims do. "It was your father." Those were the first words my mom said when she came to get me. She had stopped by the house first. I got something for his ass. She had balled up her fist, her face filled with a level of fury I hadn't seen since I'd set the clocks back. She noticed me hugging my bursting full book bag to my chest like my life depended on it and gave me a sympathetic smile. "Oh, honey, nobody's going to steal that stuff." She knew everything. That's how good she was. "How do you know it was Dad?" I was still imagining a cabal of criminals that had followed us home from Burlington Coat Factory. "That fool went straight to the metal drawer. Nobody else knows where that is. Okay, nobody else knows what's in there but you, me, and your brother, and your father. So who else was it?" "Your brother's in Hawaii, Kevin." "Okay, all right, I mean, look, I guess. People don't just rob you and cook. You bet your ass it was your father. His favorite damn food is grits." She vented on a whole walk home. But I had my Eastlands. I had my new shirts. I had my new jeans. Everything had turned out fine. I called my dad the next day. This was the entirety of the conversation. "Dad, Mom said you robbed us. What? She don't know what she's talking about, boy. Let me call you back. A small part of me believed him, because I didn't think it was possible for my own father to do something so low. I didn't hear from him again until he called 3 weeks later. Where you at, Dad? That's what I asked him. When you coming to visit me? Oh, you know what? I want to see you, son. I just got a lot going on right now. I'll see you in a couple weeks. Hey, don't you forget about your dad, though. You hear me? A couple weeks passed, and I didn't see him. He just called to check in on me and promised to see me again. This happened over and over again, and then he just stopped calling. Then one afternoon, I finally saw him. I was sitting on the train, and my dad walked through the door, and at the end of the car, I exclaimed, Dad? He looked me dead in the eye. Then he turned around and ran back into the other car he came from. I sat there, confused. That night, I wrote my brother a letter. I think I saw Dad on the train, man, and he ran away from me. 2 weeks later, I received my brother's reply. Dude, don't worry about it. Dad's on drugs. He's not thinking right, all right? He didn't mean anything by it, Kev. What? When I heard that, I felt dizzy. I felt sick to my stomach. At a family party that night, I asked all my relatives and friends about my brother's accusation. Evidently, everyone else in the world knew this piece of information but me. Hey, man, is it true, Kev? That your dad on drugs? No. Dude, what? Shut up. Okay, why? If that's the case, why didn't anybody tell me? Oh, we telling you now. He is on drugs. He on drugs bad, man. Real bad. Stop it. Don't you think that's something that I should have known? Hey, look, just don't give him no money. Because if you do, it's going straight to drugs. Do you know Dad was on drugs, Mom? Look, Kevin, I knew. I'm Patsy, did you know? Yes, Kevin. Everybody knows. And now you know too, so don't give him anything. All I could do is take a beat and simply agree. Okay. As usual, I shoulder shrugged it. But years later, I had an opportunity to speak with him again about robbing us. The conversation went like this. Chapter 19, Truth, Justice, and the Hard Way. The time. It was the present. It's Father's Day. The place, Orlando, Florida, vacation rental home. The size, 20,300 square feet bigger than my childhood home. Question of the day, because this is a mystery that needs to be solved. Dad, did you ever break into our house and take our stuff? I asked, bluntly. My dad's like, no. No. I said, Dad, listen. If Mom were here, she would argue you down right now. He said, Kev, I didn't do it. Okay? I'm telling you I didn't do it. Now, here's the thing, Dad. It's not that I don't believe you. I'm not saying that, but I'll never forget what Mom said. Okay? When we went in that house, the first thing she said was, it was your father. My dad cut me off. As soon as I said that, he said, Kev, listen, here's the thing. With Nance, anything that was wrong, it was always me. Yeah, but Dad, I mean, come on, man. All arrows pointed to you on this one. I mean, who else gonna come into the house and cook their favorite food, Dad? That just don't make no sense. He said, Kev, listen. Listen, there's nothing that I won't admit, because back then, it wasn't me. All right, it was that damn demon. So if I did something, I'd tell you. But ain't nobody gonna beat my butt over something I didn't do. Come on, Dad. Come on. At this point, I'm really just trying to get the truth out of my dad. Dad, stop. He said, I ain't do it, Kevin. The only thing I ever did was back before your brother. I brought him home one time and your mom wasn't there, and I wasn't gonna leave him in the hall, so I just went ahead and took the door hinges off to let him in. That's the only thing I did. Okay, all right. See, this is what I'm talking about, Dad. You use the same method of getting in. That's the same way that they got in the house. Let me tell you something. For all of the listeners right now, let me tell you guys something about my dad, okay? He will give you every hero story in the world, but we all know the reality. That's the crazy thing about my dad. Now, granted, while we're going back and forth, he goes, boy, see, your problem is you think people gonna pay you for talking about me like this, okay? Knock yourself out. Ain't nothing wrong with my self-esteem. If I bust you in the goddamn head, that ain't got nothing to do with nothing. I don't know why you turning this into a violent situation. Then he got real mad. He said, Kevin, let me tell you something. Everybody want to listen. Y'all want to know something about this boy? Let me tell you something about this boy here. Nancy sheltered him and his brother. And I understand that. This is when my dad started getting deep. He said, see, that's part of a mother's love. Now me, as a father, I was different. I had to get them boys out in the streets. So they gonna get robbed. So they might get beat up or whatever. I wanted them to be exposed. Give them some survival skills. That's what I did. And in doing